What's going on, everybody? Happy Tuesday or Wednesday or whenever the hell you're listening to this. I'm me, that's John Middlecoff, Three and Out Podcast, Colin Coward Podcast Network, recording this on a Monday night, August 5th. I saw the Fox Sports Radio tweeted out. We had huge, huge numbers in terms of listeners. I know this specific show is doing really well. Appreciate everyone listening that downloads it on Colin's feed, obviously, which is the cash cow. If you subscribe to just my normal feed, appreciate that too. It's all the same for me, so I'm glad. This show's awesome. I mean, I'm lucky enough, hell, honored that Colin even asked me to do this last year, whenever, I guess maybe it was 2 years ago now, two falls ago, is when he reached out, and it's been very professionally and creatively, you know, it's just been an awesome experience. It's cool to interact with you guys, everything we do through Instagram, Middlecoff Mailbag, do that on this show too today. Got a lot more questions. We got a lot going on. There's nothing like fall football season. So if we can crush it in a random month in July, I'm ready for August, September, October, November, December, and just the fall. I mean, it's the best time of year by a mile for sports because we get football, and I can't wait. So today, you know, Tom Brady signed, I guess, re-signed, extended, kind of a bizarre contract. We'll dive into that. Read some interesting stuff from Peter King. He went down to Tampa Bay with Jameis, with Bruce Arians, just some of the buzz that's coming out of there. You know, we've had, at least here in the Bay Area, Antonio Brown, D. Ford are now on the shelf. Antonio came with the messed up feet. D. Ford got hurt at practice, tendonitis. But I think there's a way, a right way and a wrong way to manage injuries when you get veteran players. We'll obviously dive into the Middlecoff mailbag, and I'll jump a little bit with some stories that I saw around the league. But I want to start with this. Tom Brady and Robert Kraft. I mean, it might be the most powerful financial marriage we've ever seen in pro sports. Because what is going on there just doesn't make sense. And I want to start by laying this out. I believe in following laws. Like laws that can make you go to jail. Like, yeah, if you want to make money, do something legal. Like if you sell cocaine to make a lot of money, you deserve to go to jail. Right? If you commit murder, like you're breaking laws. If you commit white-collar crime, you're a criminal. But if you push the envelope on things that maybe in your business are arbitrary rules for a given industry, it doesn't bother me as much. Like, I'm kind of in the internet business. I run another podcast. I do an internet show every day on Periscope. There aren't really any rules. I can kind of do whatever I want. One day, it'll be regulated and there will be rules. Right now, if I want to rip video off Twitter and post it on my Instagram, I can. And I do it. It's the Wild Wild West. Hell, Barstool created kind of an empire by doing that. You can take advantage being kind of an early entry into certain things, i.e. the internet. Now it's been around 20 years, but in 200 years we'll be like, damn, the internet was crazy back in the day. Yeah, it's the Wild Wild West right now. So are there rules, like Robert Kraft, if he got a hand job at Orchids of Asia, like that, and he paid for it, yeah, he's breaking the law there. Now, we can go down a whole nother discussion, should prostitution be legal or illegal, but there's a difference between right and wrong. Now, there's also just like, there's an arbitrary law down the street from where I'm at right now, not down the street, but a 4-hour drive, you can go to Dennis Hoff's Bunny Ranch and it's legal. So, is prostitution a little bit of an arbitrary law? Sure, but in certain states, it's a black and white law. If you pay, you know, a prostitute, you're going to jail or you're getting in trouble. Now, he's so rich, he can avoid it. But my ultimate point is, they've been paying Tom Brady pennies on the dollar relative to what all these other quarterbacks were making, and something doesn't add up. Like, clearly, I think we all acknowledge something shady is going on. And if it ever comes out that he was siphoning money through TB12 in the commercial real estate property that Robert Kraft owned to pay Tom Brady on the side, it would not bother me at all. Not one bit. No different than, like, when a college kid takes $100,000 from a booster. Why should he give a shit? Because the NCAA rules say he can't? He's not breaking a law. He's breaking NCAA rules. Now, would Robert Kraft be circumventing the salary cap rules? Sure. But in his mind, like, rules are meant to be broken. Especially if I'm not going to jail for it. What are you going to do? Take away a first-round pick? So what? I've gotten Tom Brady on the cheap for 10-plus years. And you could have probably only pulled this off if you had just this unreal trust with the player. It's probably just an owner-player thing that they know about it. Now, I'm not saying it's going on, but it's never added up how they did business. And again, I would promote and I would want my owner to do the same thing. The Patriots have benefited from Tom Brady taking these really cheap deals. It doesn't make any sense in a sport where every guy is trying to get the most amount of money. And I often hear, well, his wife's worth all this. Well, yeah, this. Yeah, a lot of people. Peyton Manning comes for money. Russell Wilson's wife has a little cash. I mean, who cares? It has nothing to do with Giselle having money. It is simply, more than likely, something shady's going on. And you know what? I say, welcome to capitalism. A lot of shady shit happens. Now, are you breaking a law? Like an actual law written by the government? Or are you breaking a league rule? Because if you break league rules, I don't get as bothered. Because I think league rules, just like I know a lot of owners, GMs, coaches, think a lot of league rules are stupid. Think they're kind of arbitrary. Think they're kind of random. Think they had an agenda when they were passed. So I'm not as bothered by it if something shady is going on. And if you go to Brady's contract history, when you look, I saw this great tweet. And it basically got all the quarterbacks of his era since the new CBA. And it was like, I'm going to pull it up right now. It was Brady, Rodgers, Wilson, Breeze. Okay, here it is. Let's group Brady with the eight other quarterbacks for this analysis. Rodgers, Breeze, Stafford, Matt Ryan, Joe Flacco, Eli Manning, Ben Roethlisberger, Phillip Rivers, and obviously TB12. All were rookies before the CBA agreement in 2011. All have started at least 75% of the teams of the same team's regular season games since 2011. Obviously, Flacco's on a different team. The other guys are still with their original team. Brady ranks last in cash earnings among those nine players since 2011. Explain that one to me. I mean, you're talking about the greatest quarterback ever is making less money than Eli Manning and Joe Flacco. So I applaud Robert Kraft for figuring this out, and I applaud for Tom Brady. And if they did this above board, Tom Brady's just truly one of the great humans. If they did this below board and it's a little shady, welcome to the real world. Welcome to a capitalistic society. This stuff's always happening and it always will. And I'd argue, well, shouldn't Paul Allen in Seattle maybe try to work out with something with Russell Wilson so they could attack their team in a different way? Shouldn't the Lions have tried to figure out maybe you could give Matt Stafford some Ford stocks on the low? I mean, in all seriousness, if they were able to pull this off, it's incredible. I grew up on Eddie DeBartolo. He brown bagged every good player in sight. Took care of him, mob style. And he eventually got caught. And it eventually cost him, and obviously he got in more trouble, again, with the law, and was kicked out of the league. But if you're not getting in trouble with the law, it doesn't bother me if you break quote-unquote league rules as much, to be honest with you. Now, the other big element to this, it's one of the more bizarre contracts we've ever seen. Because at first, over the weekend, it was like, it's a two-year extension, we're $70 million. And then Rap Sheet tweeted out something earlier today, which I'm still kind of struggling to come to grips with because it doesn't really make that much sense. It's almost like he didn't even sign a deal. Rap Sheet said, sources, Patriots quarterback Tom Brady's new deal includes a provision that does not allow New England to franchise or transition tag him in 2020. The final 2 years automatically void on the last day of the 2019 league year. But he cannot be tagged. Brady will be a free agent. How does that even make sense? So he just signed a fake deal? What Brady, Kraft, and maybe Belichick's involved, maybe he's not, maybe Brady, Belichick, I don't even want to be involved, you guys deal with this. It's one of the greatest mysteries. There are clearly, I got some conspiracy theories. Something weird's going on, but they've figured it out, and they're running circles around the rest of the league. I also think that it's a little weird, that it's not even weird, that a 42-year-old just signed a contract extension. Like, how long is this thing going to go forever? I was thinking about it today. I was at multiple games Peyton Manning's live, Peyton Manning's last season. I was at a Raider game, and I was at the Super Bowl. And at the Raider game, it was mid-year. It was when his season was kind of falling apart. And one of the big stories was Charles Woodson, who was still playing then, had never picked off Peyton Manning. Well, in that game, Charles picked them off twice. And I'll vividly remember the second pick. It was like this long bomb, and he just had no zip on it. And it just floated up in the air like a duck. And Woodson, who still could play at like 38, came from the middle of the field, high-pointed that ball, and made just an incredible pick. DJ Hayden, I think, was quoted being like, Charles Woodson was flying, like if you've ever seen the movie Angels in the Outfield, when the Angels pick up the players. That's what DJ Hayden said he looked like. He just floated, like Peyton Manning's ball. Peyton was a shell of himself. Now, history would tell us, Father Time, that normally happens. When Peyton fell off a cliff, Brett Favre fell off, like injuries just ruin you. You either get carted off the field, and that's how your career ends, like a Troy Aikman, like a Steve Young, or you just fall off a cliff play-wise, Brett Favre, Peyton Manning, and it's clear it's over. I don't know which one's going to happen to Favre, or excuse me, to Tom Brady. Now, I would say it'd be more likely that he has a catastrophic injury, because unlike Peyton, he still has well enough arm strength. So it's hard to fall off a cliff if you still have really good arm strength, because he's never been a great athlete. So I would say he'd have a catastrophic injury, like a random injury, right? Shattered leg, broken shoulder, something. But it could have happened the last couple years. He's really good at avoiding hits now, almost like there's no end in sight. But for us, this would be like, oh yeah, of course they re-signed Tom Brady to an extension, even though it's not really an extension, he's a free agent. Oh yeah, Tom Brady, he's 42! He's 42! Is this guy really going to play till he's 43, 44? We're talking about in 100 years, knock on wood, America's still around, that we're going to be talking about this as just one of the craziest careers ever. It's just not going to make sense. Be like, yeah, the greatest quarterback ever. He was married to a supermodel. There might have been some shady shit because he was making way less than he should have made. He played for like 25 years. How many Super Bowls did he win? Well, like 8. He went to 12. Is this thing ever going to end? Because I actually had heard some people in the know, and I think it's kind of well established at this point, that Belichick was just in the mindset to get rid of Brady for Garoppolo, Steve Young to Joe Montana style. But Brady kind of felt it coming, went to Kraft, who clearly they're in bed with financially, knows where the bodies are buried, kind of forced Jimmy out, why the Niners kind of lucked into Jimmy Garoppolo, in theory, if he stays healthy, for a second-round pick mid-season because Belichick never waits that long to get rid of a guy. He would have got rid of him in the offseason. It didn't quite add up. But then Tom keeps playing well. I started thinking today, like, how many Super Bowls have they won? Have they won 3 straight? Well, they won one, and then they lost to the Eagles, and they beat the Falcons. It's hard to even keep up with what years they won the Super Bowl. I just know they've won a lot. And a big reason is because this guy's play. Now, this year's going to be a little unique. They lost Gronkowski. Edelman's banged up right now. I assume he comes back. They have a rookie receiver. You know, they got a couple young, stable of running backs and Sony Michel and Damian Harris, the kid they drafted from Alabama, still to go with Deion Lewis, who's one of the best pass-catching backs in the league, and Burkhardt, who's just a good role player. So you think they're the Patriots. They'll figure it out. But one of these days, it's like a depression's not going to hit, but a recession. Hopefully a depression doesn't hit. But a recession is inevitable, right? Every economist will tell you every 8 to 10 years, it's cyclical. It gets high, and then it slows down, then it slows down. Then it gets high, then it slows down. It's been like that since the history of, the Great Depression. It's been pretty consistent, give or take a year or two here and there. So you would say the history of quarterbacks, like 40 is about the end. So this guy is in uncharted territory, but he's also involved with the best coach, who he also gives this discount to so they can sign other players, kind of, in theory. They don't always do that, but they've done a good job drafting. I just think the Patriots, you can't even make this shit up. I mean, you really can't. It's why when a book comes out about them, it's a must read. When the Belichick book comes out, it's fascinating. They're just the most interesting, head-scratching, just you can't believe jaw-dropping stories have been part of this dynasty, and they just continue with this contract extension. Okay, let's dive into something I read today, and I got to start kind of paying attention because obviously here in the Bay, I'll focus in on the Niners' opponent every week, and the 49ers' first opponent, and this is not why I ended up reading it, but is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who, typically on the West Coast, when you play an East Coast game and it's not a primetime game, the game for us is usually in the morning. So it's a 10 a.m. kickoff wherever you live, relative, 10 a.m. Pacific time. So it's usually a 1 o'clock East Coast kickoff. But for some reason, the 49ers' first game is a primetime relative to an East Coast, like a 1:30 game. It might be Fox's standalone game, 49ers versus Bruce Arians and Jameis Winston. And there are a lot of positive things coming out of Tampa Bay. And you got to take this with a grain of salt, because anytime a training camp, right, just starts, or anytime you're in the off season with a new coaching staff, then to training camp, it's going to be positive. Everything that you did poorly in your past, that new coaching staff is going to be working on correcting, right? It's like you should never read about some startup company that was given $50 million in seed money. You know, they're really screwing up. It's usually pretty positive. Everything you hear in the initial stages of anything that's kind of big financially, and any time that you hire a new coaching staff like Bruce Arians, and they, I think, lead the league with 30 coaches, it's going to be good. A lot, you know, they're working on Jameis, blah, blah, blah. The team's looking good. They're working on this. They're working on that. They're going to be better here. They're going to be... That's just a natural reaction. Typically, good teams, like, what's going on with the Chiefs? What's going on with the Patriots? I don't know, just getting better like they normally do. They'll be ready, be a playoff team. But whenever you got shitty teams, they get new coaches. Oh, my God, have you seen Kyler Murray? Oh, my, have you seen the new Jameis? I love reading the stories from Minnesota. They are giving Kirk Cousins all these brand new looks defensively. Like, hey, guys, Cousins isn't a rookie. He's been in the league for like 8 years. He's seen them all. He's just not good enough. But Jameis is kind of fascinating because he's right in that sweet spot of where most humans get in a profession. Will you get to the point where you're still open to improving? And I think for the most part, in any profession, including football, smart people are always open to improving, especially when they get around other smart people. Sometimes it can be tough if the guy you're working for or the coach you have, maybe you don't respect, maybe you think you're smarter than, maybe you just don't mesh. I mean, that's usually where you get issues. But Bruce Arians, who I always thought was the perfect coach for Jameis. Now, granted, I sold my Jameis stock when he got into that thing with the Uber driver, because it's been drip, 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 and then when you touch an Uber driver, I would imagine every single person listening to this, every single one of you, has been in an Uber. And I would imagine every single one of you haven't come close to having any issues with the Uber driver in terms of sexual touching. Now, you might argue with them because they won't take you through Taco Bell when you're kind of drunk, you know, late night coming home from a concert, or maybe that's just me. And I get some Uber drivers don't want you to eat in their car, but, you know, I'm hungry. But, you know, I'm maybe a little drunk too, but I want to eat. But I get it. I respect your rules. But if you say no, I'm not going to argue with you. I just, okay, I'll sit here, get me home. And Jameis couldn't get it, so I backed off. And then he has more picks than he does career games started. That's a massive red flag. And he hasn't been in the league 1 or 2 years. He's a four-year starter. So I got issues with Jameis. But the one thing that Peter King wrote about today is that they are really hammering home, bro, you have to learn to live another down. You can't just try to make the big play every play. And Jameis used the quote to Peter King, like, I got to be a better game manager. So I am open to the possibility that Arians saves his career, because right now he was going down a very, very bad spot. And I would imagine all of us have watched Jameis over the last couple years on the right game, where you go, God, this guy's pretty good. The one thing that can't be disputed about their team, drafted O.J. Howard, have Mike Evans, who's a stud. I'm a big Ronald Jones guy, and I liked him a lot at SC. And he's one of those guys, I'm not giving up after 1 year. I did the same thing with Devontae Adams. You want to get rid of your stock? I'll take it all. Now, I'm not as high on Ronald Jones as I was Devontae Adams, but similar vein, I know the way Ronald Jones plays, he can play in the NFL. And I think Bruce Arians is the first perfect coach for him. There's just too many weapons. If Jameis can kind of corral some of his natural instincts to screw up to make things happen. Because don't forget, Carson Palmer was in a very, very weird spot in his career when Bruce Arians got him. And when Bruce Arians got him rolling back, the train back on the tracks. Now, Carson had had much more success and been a better player in the league than Jameis had before BA got him, and clearly was an older player and much more mature human. But I don't think it can be discounted that there might be something there. And I think, this game's going to be marked on my calendar, but I do think the 49ers-Tampa, I have to give Tampa a little more respect in that game. The 49ers are not good enough just to chalk it up as a W. Jimmy has not played enough. And Bruce Arians, we cannot forget, for all the coaches that were hired this offseason, Kingsbury couldn't win at Texas Tech. LaFleur was widely viewed as the one guy McVay didn't view that highly, even though he's, you know, put in with the McVay guys. what other new coaches are around. I always forget the new coaches. Zach Taylor. I honestly know nothing about the Cincinnati Bengals coach. You know, a lot of the new coaching staffs that are all these young, hotshot offensive guys, I got red flags up on a lot of them. And even the last couple years, like, I don't think that highly of Pat Shurmur. I don't think that highly. I'm trying to think. Why am I blanking out here? Freddie Kitchens. I know nothing about Freddie Kitchens. I kind of like him. Kind of like the draw, the Southern type. I'm rooting for Freddie. Seems like a nice guy. Seems like a good guy to, you know, grab dinner with and talk ball. I would imagine if we all knew Freddie Kitchens, we'd like the guy. Can he coach? We're about to find out. Can Bruce Arians coach? You bet your ass he can. Because I've seen him line up against Pete Carroll and Jim Harbaugh for years and hit him right in the teeth and go to war with those guys. I saw Bruce Arians walk into the NFC West when Seattle and the 49ers got it together and were winning big and go 10-6 his first year with the Arizona Cardinals, which is a lifetime joke franchise. Joke franchise. Bruce Arians came in there and made them real in a big-time division. Not the NFC West when 7-9 won it back in 2010 when you had Harbaugh and Seattle humming. So Arians is the real deal. Now, does he have some flaws? Does he want to throw and maybe he should run? Sure. But B.A. can coach. And B.A., the staff that he's bringing, Todd Bowles and all the other defensive guys and some of his offensive coaches, they were with him in Arizona. So it's the same staff, the same group thought that kicked ass 7 years ago or whenever he first got to Arizona, I think 2013, now in Tampa. Which, I promise you this, they inherited a lot more talent in Tampa than he inherited in Arizona. So I guess I'm just leaving it with, keep an eye on this. While I'm out on Jameis, I officially said that when he got suspended for the Uber driver, I'm not out on the fact that B.A. might be able to resurrect his career. Now, that won't mean I'm rooting for him. You know, I hope anyone matures. We don't all mature at the same time. Jameis, I don't know how many second chances you get, but don't be surprised if you see Jameis put up some numbers this year. Okay, I want to dive into something that bothers me in the NFL. And I think sometimes with football coaches, there is a disconnect of how important the players are financially. Like, they are high, high-priced assets. And most of the older coaches get this. Think about this. Like Belichick, Pete Carroll, Andy Reid, all the guys that are 60-plus have been in the league since you ran double days for weeks on end. Hell, I'm 35. When I was in high school football, we had two straight weeks of double days. A double day is not allowed in the NFL. Training camps are pretty easy. But I think a lot of times younger coaches, because the nature of the sport is you practice way more than you play. And if you've ever met a football coach, really at any level, they really value practice. Practice means a lot to football coaches because it matters. Because it's not like baseball where it's like, you'll get them tomorrow, just be in the lineup. Or basketball, we play another game tomorrow. You only play once a week. You only play once a week. And unlike, especially basketball, the offseason, unless you have the entire team together, it's hard to practice. Like football, you can't just randomly practice. It takes organization. It's just a complicated sport. So coaches put a huge value on practice, which I completely understand. Especially offensively. It takes a lot of reps, timing, and chemistry. And I was around Andy, and he's been really good at this. I mean, crush it in Kansas City. Tomba Ali, I remember reading a couple years ago, he credited him with saving his career. Did not make him practice. And when I first got to the media, I used to go to Niners practice with those Harbaugh teams. Justin Smith did not practice that much. I completely understand in the NFL trying to make young players, even high draft picks like Nick Bosa, for example, who has an injury history, making him practice, making him earn his toughness, get his reps. Like he hasn't done anything in the league. He's been paid $30 million, signing bonus or whatever the hell he got, without doing a goddamn thing. We hope he's going to be good. He's dominated practice. I think he's going to be, actually, might be wrong. He might be an elite player. We'll see. He's been kicking McGlinchey's and Joe Staley's butt every day. But, like, he's got to prove some stuff. Dee Ford, who the 49ers traded for, and I think it's symbolic to a lot of players around the NFL, is going into his 6th year. He spent 5 years, You know, he's drafted in the first round 4 years and then his fifth-year option. Double-digit sacks multiple times. Was a Pro Bowler last year. I understand why he's going to want to practice and why the coaches are going to want to make him practice. But if you're the 49ers, you give up a second-round pick for him. He has a long injury history of soft tissue issues, of back issues. You have to be very careful with him. There is zero reason to make him prove anything in practice. When you traded a second-round pick for him and gave him $35 million in guaranteed money, you're showing him you know what he is. Like, he's proven to you what he's worth, the reason you're giving up the draft pick and paying him the cash. I don't need to see anything at practice. And the 49ers, when I was at OTAs, I'm like, God, they're making him do a lot. And then the pads come on. He's practicing a lot. I wouldn't have him practice that much. And it's not like some positions, especially in offense, he's a designated pass rusher. Now, technically, he's a starting pass rusher in the wide nine. He's got one gap, the ball snapped, he chased the quarterback. I have to have him for Sundays. And it's not just Kyle Shanahan. It's just younger coaches just in general. And it's just a coach thing. Sometimes you get so short-sighted, you don't realize no one's ever won a Super Bowl in early August. So we're all the players all over the league. Like Joe Staley, the third practice of the 49ers training camp, he got off. I was texting with a buddy in Chicago today. He's like, yeah, Khalil gets a vet day like once a week. He gets a vet day once a week, plus he gets a day off once a week because the entire team does. So he doesn't practice that much. And when he practices hard. But the only thing that matters with Khalil Mack is on Sundays he's ready to roll. He doesn't need to learn the defense. He doesn't need to prove anything in practice. And I'm not saying D4's Khalil Mack because I promise you he's not. But he is in the sense that he gets injured a lot. I can't lose him in practice. If I'm going to lose him, I have to lose him in the game. Why? Well, tip my hat to Sean McVay and the Rams. You know what he's done with training camp? Punted on the whole damn thing. Texting with a buddy today in the league, kind of picking his brain, because part of training camp, you're following all these teams. He's like, yeah, I make a Twitter list for all the teams that I have to kind of keep track of. I'm like, ah, that's kind of pretty smart. You follow the beat reporters, it's much easier to keep kind of information. But I was like, God, you know, one thing I've noticed just casually is have the games ever been worse? Like when I first got to the league, some preseason games were not that terrible. You have veteran guys play. No one really plays anymore. Nobody. I think the preseason is just completely unwatchable. It's poop. It's awful. It's nuts that 7 million people watch the Hall of Fame game. That's the worst football game I've ever seen in my life. Now, the broadcast was excellent. Al, in rare form, not even paying attention to what's going on the field, just talking to Dick Ebersol and Elway. It was fantastic. But the actual game couldn't have been worse. Like, why would you play anyone in the preseason? It doesn't make any sense. There is no risk. But to me, even the bigger thing is when you have veteran players that have battled injuries and have proven their worth, either you've given them money or you've traded for them to acquire, you have to be very, very careful. And it's on the front office to work with the coaching staff, because once you're on the field, you kind of get tunnel vision. You want to see the guy work. And I'm just as guilty. I'm at practice. Like, I want to see more D Ford. He should be on the sideline. And all these players around the league that have battled with injuries that are older, like, I understand. I saw DK Metcalf's hurt. Like, yeah, you got DK Metcalf's got to practice. Rookies, young players have to practice. But when you get 6th, 7th, 8th year guys that you're paying a lot of money to, I'm sorry, I don't put much emphasis, and I know most people in the front offices, in practices in August. I actually think they get overanalyzed sometimes, and we consistently see guys that dominate in practice get to the games and aren't the same with young players, let alone veterans. My only concern with a 7th, 8th year guy that's in the peak of his powers is that how am I going to keep him healthy? I know he knows the scheme. I know that he's competitive. I've seen him play for however many games I have in the Rolodex of being able to look at every game he's ever played. If you're a 7th year guy, do the math. 16 times 6, even if you've missed some games like D Ford. We have a long, long resume of D Ford playing in NFL games. So it pisses me off when coaches press older guys too much. In no other business would you take such an asset and push them to levels once they've already proved something into an area that's meaningless. Now, I'm all for the games, pushing through it, playing an injured guy. I get it. You know, you're paid to play on Sundays, and Sundays matter. And I'm also not saying practice doesn't matter. It clearly does in the sport of football. But certain positions with certain players that are relatively basic, like the wide nine defensive end, Like, I'm D Ford probably has it in 1 week. You know, I just need to see him healthy. And I think this goes for a lot of older players around the league that I think sometimes coaches get in their own way, and then they get pissed off when the guy can't practice. Can we talk a little bit about holdouts? And I talked about it a while back that not all holdouts are equal. And let's, on the most basic level, the premise of a holdout, right, is to create some leverage. Like in any human in any business, they try to create a little leverage, because if you have leverage, if you let the market economy, whoever's your employer, think that you can go somewhere else and get more money, they'll pay you money. Well, in football, it's a little more complicated because often you're under contract. So they kind of got you by the balls. You can't just go out and get another offer. You just hold out the hope that they miss you and they give you a pay bump. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't. To me, if you're going to hold out, if you're going to hold out, it's why I always say the most powerful words. And I've been in business for a short period of time, been around it my whole life with my dad, and just have family, friends in business, and every person that's successful on any level, and I've found this out, and I think it works a little bit personally too with relationships, but definitely professionally. I'm not into playing games, but just professionally for sure. Say no. Hey, we'll hire you for X. No. Even if you know, sometimes you got to bluff. Now, it can be nerve-wracking. Like, calling someone's bluff is tough. A holdout is difficult because a lot of these guys want to play. But if you are going to hold out, like I can never quite say his name, Yannick Ngakoue, the really good pass rusher for the Jags, you know, a top 6 or 7 edge rusher in the league. There's a short list of guys, Vaughn, Khalil, Frank Clark. I mean, it's a short list. You know, maybe Clowney, obviously Watt is kind of unique, that are better than this guy. He has crushed it the last couple years, basically averaged double-digit sacks since he came into the league. He was a third-round pick, so he hasn't made that much money. He's got a career, basically 30 sacks in his career. Once you're holding out, reports are that he showed back up. I mean, he's back. And he basically said, I don't really want to talk about it. And I started to think, it's August 5 or August 5th. I said August 5. You know what I meant. August 5th. What was the point of the holdout? Part of your holdout should have been going Khalil Mack, because you do have some leverage. They drafted you. You're clearly one of their best players. You're arguably their second best young player behind Jalen. Don't show up. Like, what is the point if you're going to hold out? Now, I wouldn't recommend a holdout, though I know where this guy's coming from. Because unlike Jalen Ramsey, who, as I've talked about before, has already got the bag. He was a top 5 player, and he's going to get another bag. He's already been paid a lot of money. That's why I never lose sleep over, like, I'm not losing sleep over Clowney's holdout. Clowney's already made a lot of money. But if you're Clowney, do not show back up. There was a report today I saw on PFT that Clowney's going to show up after the 3rd preseason game. For who? For what? Part of, you're trying to get paid. Do not show up. At minimum, till week 1. You have to put them in a position where they're like, God, this guy really might miss some games. Even if you're not planning on it. But if you get that close, you might freak them out. I give Cam Chancellor credit. Remember a couple years ago, he held out? Might have been 4 or 5 now. And it was like, you know, he'll be back by the 3rd preseason game. Because that's what teams assume. Oh, he'll be back. Like Ngakoue. Yeah, he'll come back. And he did come back. So what was the point of your holdout? To get a couple days just at home chilling with the girlfriend? Like, you lost. They won. When you go Cam Chancellor, yeah, I'm calling your bluff, Seattle. You think I'm going to show up week 1? Screw you. Then he held out week 1, week 2, and he got some money. Hell, if I was Ngakoue, I struggle to say his name. I might hold out week 1. You have to create some leverage. This is a business. Be cold-hearted. If I'm Clowney, I ain't showing back up. Screw you. Trade me or pay me. Like, you do have some leverage if you're Clowney. You are, you know, flawed, but still a top 5 or 6 edge player when you factor in how good he is against the run. That's the tough part about Melvin Gordon. He doesn't have much leverage. Like, Melvin, that's why I recommend they're offering you a contract. Come sign it. They want you. They're offering you a pay bump. If I'm Zeke, now, I've been critical of the Zeke holdout because I think it's a low-level slappy move. When you've been in a lot of trouble and your owner has stood by you, he's already paid you a lot of money because he drafted you 4 overall, you should show up because he wants to pay you. But he just wants you to prove that you're a good guy. He wants to trust that when he pays you a lot of money, he can sleep at night and you're not going to get in trouble doing some stupid thing that you've proven over and over that you struggle to avoid. But when you're Clowney and you're Ngakoue and it's strictly over money, part of now it's to be a little harder for Clowney because the Texans' defensive line's good, but you lost Malik Jackson. Calais Campbell's a little older. You're their best pass rusher. I would not have shown up. Who's giving these guys advice? Like, if you, because to me, if I'm the agent and if I'm Ndakwe's agent and we're going to hold out for training camp, I say, listen, we're either showing up day one and try to negotiate and operate in good faith. You're one of their best young players. I don't know much about him. I'm going to assume he's a good character guy. They drafted you. They like you. They want to build around you. We're going to do that. But if we're not going to operate in quote unquote good faith and we're going to hold out, you have to be willing to do this for the long haul. You can't get emotional. You can't read their players tweeting at you or the fans tweeting at you. We're digging in our heels. This is business. This is not, you can't be emotional when it comes to dollars and cents because they won't be with you. You shouldn't be with them. But when you crack and you go back before the first preseason game, what the hell was the point of it all? I do not get it. If I'm Zeke Elliott, I would never have held out. But once I hold out, I'm not showing back up till I get a new contract. Otherwise, the holdout was completely pointless. It made zero sense. None. Just to get some time off. Again, these practices are really easy. Like, they're not very difficult. There's not much hitting, especially if you're one of these guys. If you don't want to play in the preseason, they won't make you play in the preseason. It boggles my mind that these guys go in these holdout situations and there's really not a plan of attack. It's why I'm critical sometimes of agents, and I get Richard Sherman's back when he goes, I'm cutting the agent out. I'm cutting the middleman out. Why am I giving a guy 2% when I could do this on my own? I could pay a lawyer a flat fee for a quarter of the price to negotiate my contract. It's not that difficult. And there's too many middlemen in these guys' lives, too many people telling these guys in their ear poor advice because I do not get it. My recommendation would be to Clowney, do not show up. Once you're in on the holdout. Now, the reason, like I said, Le'Veon Bell was making a poor mistake, it's like, Le'Veon, you're a running back, and they're offering you $14.5 million. For Clowney, I do get, if Clowney was on the open market, he wouldn't get Khalil money, but he'd get $70 million in guaranteed cash. So the difference between whatever he'd get this year, 15 or whatever, to 70, that is a big gap. That's why I supported Khalil Mack, who dug in his heels. Aaron Donald did the same thing. Like, to me, Clowney and Ndakwe have some of that leverage. Either pay me or trade me. Screw, I'm not playing for you. You have to be cold-hearted in business. You got to be almost cutthroat. You can't get emotional with this even though it's a team game. So I just hope some of these guys in the future have a plan of attack when they go into these holdouts because there's no point in a holdout for a week. Literally 0 point. Okay, let's dive into the Middlecoff mailbag. At John Middlecoff, my Instagram handle. It's where I interact with the people. I'm going to get to a bunch of new questions here. And you guys can always slide up in my DMs, ask me a question, and I'll answer it right here. Three and out question. Is it preferable to have a mix of strong bull rush, Khalil Mack, on one end, and contrasting speed rush, Von Miller, on the other? Good question. Yes, I would like Khalil on one end and Von on another. Can you rank 1 through 4 for lead color analysts? Romo, Collinsworth, Aikman, McFarlane. And give a few seconds why. I can't wait for that one. Okay, let's go 1. I don't necessarily know if you need contrasting styles. Like, I'm being tongue-in-cheek. I mean, of course, any team would take Von Miller and Khalil Mack on both ends. But I think you can have 2 bull rushers, 2 speed rushers. You just want good rushers. I don't think teams necessarily look like, I got D Ford on one side, I need to get a power rusher on the other side. Or, you know, I got Khalil Mack, I need this on the other side. If you can get Khalil Mack, you just take Khalil Mack. If you can get Clowney, you just take Clowney. You know, it's just, they're just hard to come by. So you can't really be choosy. Now, specific schemes with later round picks, you know, speed rushers that aren't great, you know, bull rushers that are strong are better in certain schemes. Like the speed rusher guy, I mean, Vaughn's very, very unique. But you can't just have a strictly speed rusher probably in like a 3-4 defense. He has to be able to hold up against the run. I think a couple years ago, which I thought was one of the best front sevens I've ever seen, the front consisted of Justin Smith, Ian Williams at nose tackle, Ray McDonald, who turned out to be a terrible human being, very underrated player. Alden Smith, Patrick Willis, Navarro Bowman, and Ahmad Brooks. Ahmad was a true power rusher, and Alden was probably more of a speed rusher, but he was just an overall rusher. I don't think teams necessarily take that into account when they draft a pass rusher. If the pass rusher is really talented, especially in the first round, you know, like Josh Allen to go along with Ndakwe. I forgot that they have Josh Allen to now go with Ndakwe. Maybe my theory of him holding out, maybe they're not going to pay him. They're just going to keep Josh Allen. I don't know why you wouldn't want them both. But you look at the Bears, they got Floyd and Mack and Akeem Hicks. You just want as many pass rushers as you can get. It made me think, though. Maybe I'm not deep enough in the way I look at it. Maybe teams do look at it that way. Shows you maybe I'm out of touch. Maybe you're the smart one. Is it Zay Smooth, 22? Can you rank 1 through 4 lead color analysts? Romo, Collinsworth, Aikman, McFarland. McFarland is clearly last, though I don't mind Booger as a person, and just when he was on the SEC network, I thought he was good. I don't think he knows the NFL that well. I just felt like he just didn't really know the NFL. Now, maybe it was just Jason Witten, who turned out, I think I listened to him on a podcast with Ryan Russillo, who's now going over to Bill Simmons, the Ringer. I guess he's leaving ESPN. Hard to blame him. That you go, God, Jason Witten's pretty smart, pretty impressive guy, but he was just terrible as an analyst. Now, McFarland, I just put him dead as last. I'm not the biggest Collinsworth guy. I think Al carries that broadcast, who I'd say is the greatest play-by-play guy in the history of America, Al Michaels. I like Michelle Tafoya. I don't really like Collinsworth that much. I don't really know why. I don't have a great reason. I think he's kind of shoved PFF in all of our faces, and though I don't have a problem with PFF. But I'd put Collinsworth third. I'm a sucker for Aikman. I've just always liked Troy. I think there's just less fluff with him. Him and Buck, to me, are the best tandem. Like, they just work the best. Those two, big game. You give me Cowboys-Eagles. You give me, you know, Niners-Seattle. I want those two guys on Fox. I think they're the best tandem, though I'd put Aikman behind Romo. I'm a sucker for Tony Romo. I love Tony Romo as a player. I love him even more as a broadcaster. I love him as a golfer. I wish Tony Romo was like my friend. I really do. I'd want to play golf with Tony. I'd want to drink beers and eat food with Tony. I'd want to just talk football with Tony. Any Jerry Jones loves Tony. I love Tony. Now, Nance, I'm a big golf guy. If you follow me on Twitter or Instagram, you probably know that I tweet a lot about it. I love the PGA Tour. I mean, I follow the PGA Tour like I do the NFL. I love the PGA Tour. Jim Nance, to me, is a little cheeseball. You know, he's a little much. I respect he's got a shtick, and it might not even be a shtick. It's just his deal. I'll give Romo credit. He's really loosened Nance up, and that broadcast has become pretty good. So I'd go Romo, Aikman, Collinsworth, and Booger is a distant last. Now, I'd say Romo's the best, but Buck and Aikman are the best tandem, and probably Al is the best individual, and the Monday Night Football, just a disaster. If Dak becomes a free agent, what team would give him $30 million a year? Between teams with quarterbacks, the incoming draft, where you get a rookie contract, incoming rookie class, where you can get one on a rookie contract, which has proven to be a Super Bowl winning formula, what team would want him? From Tua to Herbert to all these guys, Trevor Lawrence in a year, why would any team give up that much cap space for Dak? They wouldn't. I mean, they just wouldn't. I think I said it on this podcast last week. Maybe I said it on my other podcast, Haberman Middlecoff. We talk a lot about quarterback contracts. If I'm Jerry Jones, can I look Dak in the eye and go, listen, I can franchise you next year. You can make really nothing this year. Or we can just do a deal that suits us both. I'll give you 4 years, $85 million. So it's an average of $21 million per year. But I'm going to guarantee you every penny, every stinking penny. And that $25 million that I save relative to like what Wentz signed for, I will sign Zeke and Amari, and our offense will be awesome to go along with our loaded defense. And we will win. What? Now, Dak, I get he wants to make $30 million a year, but like you said, who's paying him $30 million a year? How many teams in the NFL need quarterbacks? Saw a story that Josh Rosen lit it up in a scrimmage. What if he works out in Miami? Like the Dolphins? Why would the Dolphins want Dak Prescott? Or not the Dolphins, I mean the Bengals. They're the only team that's really missing one. Even teams like the Giants that hate their starter, they have a backup. All these teams, when you look at the amount of quarterbacks drafted in the first couple rounds the last 3 or 4 years, it's a lot. It's like 12 to 15 players. I mean, I've gone over it several times here. It's a lot of guys. Even if you go back to like Jimmy Carr that year and then to all the way forward, just last year alone, there were 5 guys in the first round. The previous year, I think it was 3. Previous year was 3. That's 5. That's 8. That's you're talking 11 quarterbacks on rookie contracts in the last however many years. And then the previous year was Goff and Wentz. So you're up to 15 basically quarterbacks and throw in Dak in the last 15 drafts. Or I mean the last 4 drafts. 15 quarterbacks. That's basically half the league. And then you have the group of the Russell Wilsons, Cam Newtons, Andrew Lucks, Aaron Rodgers, Kirk Cousins, the older guys that are under contract. So yeah, I'm with you. Podcast question. And then I don't see a question. Maybe it disappeared. Cowboy fan here. Many claim the Cowboys' offense runs through Zeke. I say the offense runs through the O-line. DeMarco Murray and Darren McFadden had good years behind this line. Zeke is great, no doubt. But I think the Cowboys would be okay even if he doesn't play. What do you think? I don't know. I'm biased. I Zeke's holdout drives me nuts, but I will never dispute how good he is. He is a Mack truck. He's like the modern-day version of, I mean, it's a little different of Adrian Peterson in terms he will run you over. He is so powerful as a between-the-tackles runner. He's such a good outside runner. He's a natural pass catcher, and he's a hammer as a blocker. It's crazy to say because Adrian Peterson is a Hall of Famer, and we don't know about that Zeke yet, but Zeke's more complete, so I don't even like that comparison. He's like a, I'm trying to think of a comp. He'd be like a stronger version. Now, I'm not saying he's going to be as good as this player, but he's like the tank version of LT because he can do it all. I think he's that good. I hold Zeke on that type of reverence. I think he's a future Hall of Famer if he can stay healthy. Now, he's a slappy off the field. He's got to get his life together, but I would agree their offensive line has been an area that they've kind of hung their hat on, you know, this last 4 or 5 years. But Zach Martin now bulging discs. Like, offensive linemen, you don't keep your 5 guys together for usually longer than 2 or 3 years because guys get hurt, guys age, guys leave in free agency. Zeke, to me, is more important than the offensive line. I hear you, and I think you have a valid point because Darren McFadden stinks. But Zeke would crush it behind me, you, and 3 other guys blocking. If the Packers have another underachieving season, could you see Rodgers demanding a trade? Also, would you rather get him at the end of next year, assuming he's healthy, or Peyton when he became a free agent? That's a hell of a question. Knowing what we know now, like at the time, Peyton was coming off the neck surgery. No one knew if he could play. Peyton had an unreal 4 years. I mean, he led the best offense in the league, I think 2 of the 4 of them. He was a starting quarterback on 2 Super Bowl teams. Now, they got blown out in the 1. But the chances that Rodgers would leave and go to another team, a random team, because at the time, like, the Broncos were a little random, and then have success, to me, I'd say, knowing what I know now, I would take that Peyton Manning 4-year run. Now, the 4th year was pretty crappy. Luckily, their defense was so good. But those first 3 years, and I witnessed a couple live games at the Raiders, one against the Niners, that offense was unstoppable. Peyton Manning was like, I don't even know, like Picasso in his prime painting. It was just unfair. You know, just how in control he was. Like the sheriff in his old age on a mission. You know, Ray Lewis, remember if you guys have ever seen the clip when he talks to the Stanford basketball team getting ready for the NIT, Johnny Dawkins, the coach, like, I don't know, 6-7 years ago. And his main message was, you got to be pissed off for greatness. I think Peyton Manning was on a bleeping mission to be pissed off for greatness. And everyone in his way, he was trying to destroy. Now, does Rodgers still quite have that edge? I don't know. Because those first 3 years of Peyton was just, that was a badass Hall of Famer on a mission. And, he was bad the last year. He was just shot. But I'll say this, Peyton Manning deserved to end his career with multiple Super Bowls. He was too good of a player. I'd argue Aaron Rodgers does too, but, you know, their team on paper is pretty good this year. Now, is their coach good enough?
That's not his fault. They hired Matt LaFleur. So I hear what you're saying. I'm currently a student at Cal Poly. Hell yeah, go Mustangs. I know a good amount of people who study sports management at Poly, and I was wondering if you ever want to come speak at Poly about your sports career world. I personally don't study that major. I study data and computer science, but I would love to listen to you speak. God, this is padding my ego here. Yeah, I'd love to speak. They got to reach out, and I haven't received an email yet. So I'd always be open. And hell, I'd love to fire down at Cal Poly. But trust me, no one's asking me to speak anytime soon. Since you're open to talking about college football, I think if you aren't already, you need to keep an eye on Rondale Moore. This guy is going to be a Heisman sleeper. Reggie Bush himself even tweeted at Moore and said he reminds him of himself. Regardless of being part of a smaller football program, what is your take on him? Scout-minded opinions. Well, I'm going to be honest. I have never heard of Rondale Moore. So I'm going to type him. Great part about having a phone is Purdue Boilermaker. 5'9", 175. First team all Big Ten last year. See how many yards he rushed for. Rushed for 1,100 yards, 12 touchdowns. You want a little live scouting report on YouTube on Rondale Moore? Now, he's not draft eligible because he is a freshman. But I'll find a little highlight tape of Rondale Moore. The great part about YouTube is I like some good beats in the back of my Rondale Moore. So this guy, looks like he's a little receiver playing in the slot. He's got some jukes. Change of direction. He can fly. Is he a slot receiver or is he a running back? Looks like he's a running. Is he a slot receiver? That's what he looks like. Yeah, I mean, he's a playmaker. I like him. I'm going to keep an eye on him. Appreciate you with the heads up there. I honestly had never heard of him, but I'm not quite as locked in as I once was on Big Ten sleepers right now. What are the chances KC brings in another veteran running back, assuming Damian Williams can't stay healthy throughout the season? I read a headline. I haven't talked to anyone there about him, but I guess Carlos Hyde's been having a really good training camp. Carlos Hyde, to me, is somewhat of an underachiever, but he is talented. And I do think with Andy and that offense, Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, Kelce, Sammy Watkins, might not be a bad spot for him to kind of resurrect his career. So I would say Carlos Hyde, Damian Williams, claim a guy that's in 2019 in the NFL. That's good enough. Hey, John, Eagles fan here. Assuming he comes back 100% from a shoulder injury last year and continues to progress, what do you think Derek Barnett's ceiling is as an NFL player? Thanks, love the podcast. That's a hell of a question. I haven't watched him that much in the pros. Loved him as a college player coming out of Tennessee. To me, he kind of had the poor man's version of Von Miller. Really explosive edge rusher. Kind of short and squattier. Could bend the edge. He's in a place where they love getting upfield. They play fast as a defensive line in terms of there's not much messing around. You're not two gapping. You're not dropping into coverage. You're getting up the field. And Jim Schwartz, attack, attack, attack. I like this player a lot. He has, I'm pretty sure he's missed some games, right? Did he tear his ACL last year or 2 years ago? That would be my only concern. I'm looking up his page right now because he's born in 1996. God, I feel old when I look at this stuff. So Barnett, he finished his college career with 13 sacks. I mean, he was a double-digit sack guy every year. As a rookie, he was basically a backup, right, in the Super Bowl winning team that had a bunch of loaded. Okay, last year he had he was placed on injury reserve with the shoulder injury. So it shouldn't be that concerning. I mean, he's played 2 years. He missed half the season last year. He's got 8 career sacks. Seven games last year, he had 5 sacks. Or excuse me, he had 2.5 sacks. So they're going to depend on him. You take a guy in the first round, I would say coming off an injury, you're going to want double-digit sacks. This is a big year for that guy, man. First-round pick, because after this year, you got to decide if you're going to pick up the fifth-year option. And the Eagles are cutthroat, so if he's not good enough, they'll move on. Or they'll put pressure on him. This is a big season for the kid, for sure. I liked him a lot coming out of Tennessee, but to be completely honest, I haven't really studied that much since he's been in the pros. Because I watched a lot of Eagles games, but last year he didn't play that much, and the previous year he was just a backup. Hey, John, big supporter. I was wondering if there are any tips you can give to me into starting my own podcast with my brother. We're two really huge sports fans who would love to get a podcast going locally and then able to just expand it one day, becoming a scout for a college or professional team. So you want to do podcasting and scouting? That's a unique professional career path. Even if you don't respond, thanks for reading. Just give me hope. My idea when everyone asks me about, like, how do you do a pod? How do you do a pod? There's never been an easier time to do anything media-wise. Just start recording yourself. Talk. And tweet it out. Put it on Instagram. Put it on YouTube. There are all these websites that will just host your content. Just go to Twitter and post a 2-minute video of you talking. Do a podcast, tweet it out. Go to Instagram, show the link. Go to YouTube, link it with Facebook. Link it to your, if you got 500 Facebook friends, put it up there. See if people listen. It takes time. You know, I've been doing media stuff now since 2013. And it just takes time. I'm still going. It's a work in progress. You're not going to figure it out overnight. But there's never been an easier time. Like, I use Instagram, for those of you that follow me on Instagram, I just post videos on there. Short, you know, probably 2 to 3 minute videos talking about football. No one told me to do it. I just do it. Try to grow a following on Instagram. It's a much happier place than Twitter. I enjoy it. I like talking. Short blurbs. Good for millennials. Just mess around. See what works. See what doesn't work. That's always my advice. Hey, John Middlecoff. How did you get your start with an NFL team? I worked in college football. And this is another question. When everyone asks me, like, hey, I want to work in the NFL. How do I do it? How do I do it? I want to work in the NFL. How do I do it? Go to college football and try to get with a Division I program in scouting or coaching. And that's usually the way. Like, check all these guys' bios beside Bill Belichick, who started in the NFL at 22 years old. Sean McVay, I think, did too. But it's very rare. Like, even Kyle Shanahan was a GA in college football. Now, his name's Kyle Shanahan, but you get my drift. Start in college. That's the way to do it. As a 49er fan, I'm looking forward to the start of the season with a healthy Jimmy G. I think with Jimmy healthy and the additions of wide receiver plus Bosa and Ford on the D-line, we can make a playoff run. How many more years do you have before Shanahan and Jimmy make the 49ers true Super Bowl contenders? They're probably a couple core players away, but I say it all the time. If you are a good coach in the NFL, you make the playoffs in your first couple years. So if Kyle Shanahan, who I think is a high-level coach, and if they had a draft from scratch with GMs picking coaches, he'd go a lot higher than people think. Definitely a lot higher than his record would justify. I think he's a really good coach, but the time is now. He has to make the playoffs this year. He has to have a winning record this year. Like, there's no excuses anymore. A couple years in, like, Sean McVay gets to L.A., they win. Bill O'Brien gets to Houston, they go to the playoffs. Andy Reid shows up, Chiefs are terrible, they win. When he showed up to Philly, it took him a couple years, they're in the playoffs. Tom Coughlin gets the Giants, a couple years, they're in the playoffs. Good coaches, you don't need to win the Super Bowl, you know, but you get to the playoffs. That's just the way this league works, proven over and over. Check coaches' resumes within their first 3 years. Good coaches make the playoffs. A lot of them do it within their first two. So this is a massive, massive year for Kyle Shanahan. I don't think the 49ers' best case scenario would probably be like win the division and maybe win a playoff game. But if they won the division, they would probably still play in the first weekend because it'd be hard for them to win over 10 games. I think they're a year away from adding like a blue chip wide receiver and maybe just another impact defensive player. But I think that they have no excuse. Let me repeat, no excuse to not be competitive and a legit playoff contender if Jimmy plays all the games. I'm assuming Jimmy's going to play all the games. If he doesn't, that situation is a disaster. You're probably looking at Jimmy Garoppolo's last year in San Francisco. But if Jimmy plays 16 games, I'm not saying they should be in the playoffs because the NFC is stacked and their division's pretty good, even though I think 10 wins... Hell, I think 9 wins could win the NFC West this year. Though, like, I still have a lot of respect for the Rams, ton of respect for Seattle. The time is now. The time is now for Kyle, John Lynch, and just the 49ers in general. Appreciate everyone listening. Thanks for making the Middlecoff Mailbag fun again. Do it every week. Do it every show. I mean, slide up in those DMs. Let me know if you have any thoughts, ideas. I'm always open to whatever you got. Hit me up. And enjoy the week. We got football. I think we got preseason games on Thursday night. So get ready, baby. Talk to you guys soon. Adios. May the peace be with you. Godspeed. See ya.